RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
There's an opinion piece in the BFD at bfd.co.nz by Andrew Bidder. And Andrew is a Hamilton City Councillor. And in that opinion piece, he makes some criticism of the Waipa District Council and some of their actions recently. And that caught our attention and we wanted to find out more. So we invited Andrew to come on the program and tell us about what prompted him to write that piece in the BFD and the issues involved. Andrew, thanks for coming on to RCR.
Thanks. Good to be here.
All right. So the blue blob.
The famous blue blob. Yes. It appeared on a map of Cambridge about 3 months ago, to the complete surprise of all the people living in and around it, that there would be a new bridge and a major arterial route going through their houses. And the explanation from the council was that they had decided four options for the bridge without any consultation from the public. They had selected their preferred option, which was option C, and they were now starting the process of consultation where we were given a choice between option C and, well, actually, it was only option C.
Okay. Yeah, there's no choice at all.
No, and they are required by law to consult properly the Local Government Act 2002, Section 82, Principles of Consultation, which I happen to know well because I'm a councillor. Now, I also happen to know it well because Waipa Council has failed three times in 2 years on the same law related to the other major pieces of consultation. And since then, they've gone on to fail it on a fourth time. So you can imagine the frustration.
So what do you think's going on there? I'm going to ask you about the details around the blue blob, but what do you think's going on there?
There is a culture throughout the councils of New Zealand, because yes, they do talk to each other. They do follow the same leads. This particular issue is actually more related to the 20-minute cities and the anti-car ideology that is coming through, because the reason they put the bridge where they put it was it gives them an excuse to remove 300 car parks from the central business district of Cambridge. The bridge won't happen for another 20 years, but they are already trying to remove the car parks.
Without a thought for the people?
The retailers in the CBD have spent the last 5 years calling for more car parks. So this is just anti what the people want and need. And it is driven by the anti-car ideology of we're all supposed to be riding our bikes everywhere. And in Cambridge, if you know Cambridge, you know that it's pretty much a free-range retirement village. Yeah. A lot of elderly people. And I can't see the 80-year-olds riding their bikes to get their groceries. And they also seem to have forgotten that it rains in the Waikato.
Oh, yeah, there's that. I'm just wondering why there's such a high level of buy-in from councils to this sort of thinking. Have you got any ideas about that?
I do. So, firstly, most of the elected councillors don't know. A lot of these sorts of projects are done under delegated authority. So the councillors don't even get a choice of it, and it's often a surprise to them. And we see this with the Innovating Streets debacle that has gone on around the country, moving from council to council. And most of the councils end up ripping it all out, and embarrassed councillors keep saying in the paper, well, if we'd known what it was going to be like, we would have stopped it. So it is happening from within the staff, and the staff are the roads and traffic departments, which, as you can imagine, talk to the other roads and traffic departments and the other councils. So it spreads like a virus throughout the councils.
Like a virus, yeah. But don't councillors know that they have to keep a check on things and to be up to speed with what's happening and demand, unless it's held back, I don't know, you might be able to tell us, demand information, like, you know, stamp your feet until you get it, if you're not getting it?
That requires a level of competency in the councillors, which I find very lacking throughout New Zealand. Something which will be of interest to your listeners is the structure of councils, because it's not entirely obvious. I only learned this when I was getting ready to stand for council to fight this sort of stuff. What we have is effectively two councils. There's the council whom we elect, made up of the councillors, and an almost entirely separate organisation, the council which runs the operations. The link between them is the chief executive. So the elected councillors employ one person who's the chief executive. The chief executive employs everyone else. So as a councillor, I don't have any direct route to the staff. I can't fire them. I can't demand them to change. I have a right to ask questions through the chief executive, but that's pretty much it. We get to vote on the stuff that comes before council, which is very limited and is presented by the staff. So we don't have the democracy that everyone thinks we have. It is run by the staff.
That's it sounds quite a chill, you saying that, I've got to say. Quite a chill.
Yes, and once I understood that, I also understood central government a bit better, because we elect our parliament, we don't elect our government. All the key people in government, say the police commissioner, we don't get to vote for the police commissioner. That person is appointed through the government departments, which have as their head a person whom we might have voted for. Most of us wouldn't, because that might be an electorate person. Mm. So we don't have direct control over virtually all our government.
Oh, dear.
It starts to explain a lot, doesn't it?
It sure does. I'm wondering if we just give up now and stop talking. No, we won't do that. Well, this is very troubling, isn't it? Very, very troubling.
Very troubling and very frustrating and very hard to change, but I am trying to change it by educating people, bringing attention to it, organising people, and just get people demanding better.
Yeah.
Because what we are experiencing is not good enough. Everyone's experiencing rates increases, and you might have heard, well, in Hamilton we've got 16.5% next year. Well, the key figures to look at is what's going to happen over 5 years, which is a 97% increase over 5 years.
Wow. Okay.
And that is with debt going in Hamilton from $1 billion to $2.5 billion.
This is the same story. The pattern is repeated. I've heard almost exactly what you're saying quite a few times already. Again, I want to get to the blue blob, but the quality of councillors and, you know, their knowledge of things, even just general knowledge, is it fair to say, well, you just said it kind of lacks. How do we explain that? What's the point of standing to represent people if you don't know anything or are so passive that you'll never demand anything, you'll never fight for the people? Or have I got that wrong?
Many of the mayors, and I'll use the Waipara example in the Hamilton City Council where I'm a councillor, want to be in it because it's the nice kissing babies, cutting ribbons, giving speeches, building up your own network type of thing, the feel-good stuff. But there is a real job that they are being employed to do, and they simply aren't doing it. The job is a governance role where you do actually have to interrogate the staff to get down to the detail and ensure that the staff are doing their job with the best interests of the community at hand. That's simply not happening.
Okay, the blue blob. What would that have involved for folk in the path of that redirected traffic flow and new bridge if it had gone ahead? What were they in for? What was the downside?
So there would have been around 100 or more houses where suddenly their property value is wiped out. Why would you buy a house where you know that the quiet, leafy suburb that you want to be in, which is why people come to Cambridge, with nice wide verges, tree-lined streets, very quiet traffic, is going to be turned into the new arterial route through Cambridge, and you're going to have years of disruption for the roadworks and years of disruption for a bridge, which might even require demolishing your property. So once that's out there, no one's going to want to buy in that area. And to do that without consultation, without looking at the far more logical options that are on the outskirts of the city where you wouldn't get any disruption at all, is just wrong. Now, for those people, most families, our home is our single biggest asset. You wipe out half the value of that, your equity's gone, you're stuffed.
Yep.
So we had a public meeting where we got 500 people attending. They were angry, and rightfully so. Now, we're a town of 6,000 or 7,000 people. To get 500 people turning up on a Thursday night, standing up against this, in a pretty much sort of conservative, stoic, grey-haired, just go with the flow, don't disrupt things. That's unheard of, never happened before, and it shows the level of frustration out there.
So where is that project now?
Well, the mayor had to back down very quickly and ended up actually giving a public apology, a rather interesting public apology because she blamed the public.
Okay, how so? What did the public do that was so wrong?
Getting upset. We shouldn't have got upset.
And we want kindness and empathy, eh? Oh,
it was all our fault for not understanding the process.
Right, which isn't really a process that means anything to people.
No, it's certainly not a process where they've already made the decision and the consultation is a box-ticking exercise.
Was there an admission, what you said at the start, that this was just to clear the way or clear out 300 car parks because we had this vision of 80-year-old women riding along on bicycles through the town, like something out of, I don't know, The Wizard of Oz, you know, the scene when she rides past?
No, there wasn't. And they got the response completely wrong again, because what we want in Cambridge is for a bridge position to be decided so that everybody knows where it is and can plan ahead around it and the city can evolve, which requires the discussion to make that. The mayor's response was to say, okay, and the bridge is clearly too hard, we won't even consult on its location for the next 20 years. Well, that's defeated purpose completely. We do want to know it is so we can evolve to meet the need.
Yeah.
But deciding on where it is a process that requires consultation. And we would like to do that now.
Yeah. So the mayor can make a decision like that off the cuff or in the face of opposition, but not in the council chamber.
That's a good point, because that decision was made in a council workshop, not in the council chamber.
Oh, okay.
And council workshops are for discussion. You are not allowed to make a decision in a council workshop, which is something that Waipa has been criticised for by the Ombudsman, because too many council workshops are held in secret, and again, they have specific purposes, and decision making is clearly not one of them. It has to be made in the council chamber. So that's yet another breach of process.
No, mark out of 10, yeah. And they should know that, right? Yes. They should know that. Well, they do know that.
Yes, but it appears to me that very few councillors have actually read and understood the Local Government Act. And very few councillors have any proper understanding of due process and how to get things done. My background, I was an architect for 20 years. I'm a property developer. I worked through the Resource Management Act, the Building Act, the Local Government Act, everything else to get stuff done. The lack of business experience and practical experience amongst councillors is a huge problem.
Yeah. And debt. It's not the first time council debt's been mentioned on this program either. And I think the average Kiwi knows that things are pretty tight right now and that the world's in a bit of a state, let's say. They know what's happened and they know what's happening now too. For councils to plough on saddling debt on ratepayers exponentially, it sounds like. I mean, how could anyone think that was the way to go?
It's the easy thing, and it's been done by most councils for 20 years. So the Local Government Act actually requires councils to balance their books, which means that their annual income equals their annual expense. It does have a proviso that under exceptional circumstances, the council can break that and borrow. Exceptional circumstances apparently happen every year because in Hamilton for 17 out of the last 19 years, we've failed to balance our books and we've borrowed, which has been to artificially keep rates down for political purposes.
Okay.
If they put the rates up to what they needed to be, the people will get upset and say no. So they get away with all their pet projects by hiding potential rates rises under debt. It's just the debt has to be paid off eventually. And the debt levels are getting extreme. That $2.5 billion would end up at between $30,000 and $40,000 per household in Hamilton. That's pretty typical across the country. That's not sustainable because at that point, Hamilton City Council will be paying $300,000 per day in interest. We're currently paying $150,000 per day in interest. That's a problem. Wow. We've got to get serious about it.
Yeah. Crikey, those numbers are eye-watering, man.
They are.
Yeah.
It gets worse when you bring Three Waters and the level of infrastructure required to fix that from the fact that all the depreciation maintenance money over the last 50 years has already been spent.
These pet projects that you speak of, are they nice to haves, necessary, and are they kind of driven by the ego of people?
Certainly driven by the ego. In Hamilton, we've finally realised that we don't actually have the capacity for it anymore, but we've got things like a new theatre under construction, new stadium, new events. We've got a zoo.
A zoo?
Yeah. It's a very good zoo. I really like the zoo. But that's not actually core purpose for a council.
Yeah. Have these projects been, had the cost-benefit analysis slide rule run over them? Because no one quite knows how, you know, the traditional forms of, well, entertainment in this case, I'm thinking stadium and, theatre, et cetera, are going to be used into the future. People change the way they do things. A lot of stuff's done at home now. It sounds like some kind of old thinking or assuming that the way we've always done things will just continue infinitum on forever.
I've been on the council for a year and a half, and I have never seen a business case.
Oh, man.
This is really basic stuff. It is simply not professional. You wouldn't do this in your own business.
And meantime, you're loading up those that interest, level of interest payments and debt against every household. What do you say? Up to, into the 2 billions, anyway, 30,000 per household. Mm. And that has to be recovered somehow, doesn't it? At some point.
It does. And the intention is to recover it slowly, so you're effectively paying interest on it. Now, if we take a modest 5% interest rate in the future, but now, I grew up in the 80s where interest rates at 20%.
I remember them too, yeah.
So 5%, that's $1,500 a year. And that's added on top of your rates, which if your rates are doubling from, say, $3,000 to $6,000, and then you're paying another $1,500 on top, so $7,500 a year, half of families can't sustain that.
What happens to them in that case if they can't pay? What happens?
Right. Here's another thing that your readers, your listeners should be aware of. Your property guarantees the debt.
Wow. Okay.
So there is, in effect, a mortgage on your property. If the council can't pay, the Local Government Act requires commissioners to be appointed who will set the rates at a level to repay the debt. And if you can't repay that through your rates, then they can start the process of selling your house. And one more thing. Most of the councils are members of the Local Government Funding Agency, which has sort of got all of the debt to all these councils. The member councils guarantee the debt of every other council.
Oh, okay.
All so right. If you look at Auckland, which has got $12 billion in debt, I think Wellington's got about $4 billion, Christchurch $3 billion. Your house is the guarantee for all of these debts.
This is almost insane to hear this.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, dear.
Sometimes okay. I say Hamilton should go bust first because then we get Auckland to pay our debt.
Yeah. Yeah. The last one standing's got the biggest problem.
That's right. Yeah. I don't want to be caught with Auckland's debt.
No, no one. Well, no one would. Okay, to wind up, Andrew, what is the attitude of your colleagues and council officers and staff to someone like you?
Amongst the staff, I'm not well liked. Interestingly, amongst the engineering staff, they actually do like what I'm doing because they actually understand the issues. They understand what I'm trying to change. They know it's essential. And they are frustrated that they can't change it within their system.
Right. Interesting.
Half the councillors don't like what I'm doing because I'm pointing out the problem. The other half, well, it's not quite half. We have a split in Hamilton of 6 on my side versus 8 on the other side. So we're close, but we're losing at the moment. So my side has understood the problem and we are trying to make change. But to be effective is going to wait until the next election where hopefully we can get another couple of votes and then we can change things. Until then, we put up $100 million of savings for our long-term plan. This went out for consultation and the public supported it 2-1 because we were saying it will be cuts to services. You know, the city won't look as pretty with all the weeding and might be missing, but we need to make those savings. We had the public support. The other 8 overturned it.
Oh, okay. So the public really means nothing. Having the public support doesn't mean anything, even though you're there to work for the public. Okay, we're getting this. Andrew Bitter, and your piece in the BFD, if people want to go see it, This Is a Bridge Too Far, Hamilton City Councillor. It's been revelatory. Yes. revelatory experience hearing from you this morning here at RCR. Thanks for coming on. We'll keep an eye on things. And good luck is all I can say. Good luck.
I will need it. Thank you for.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.